I thought for sure we were going to sing the Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho song during the kids. We might have to do it.
It's a hard version.
It's hard, yeah. It doesn't really make sense. I've never understood Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho. Is it supposed to be fought and we just say the word wrong, or what's going on with that song? Is it? I don't know. I never have understood that. Today, we're kind of continuing a series from New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And what was supposed to be shared last week, but we were frozen in our homes. We're talking about trusting God's plan today and lessons from Jericho. More specifically from the book of Joshua, not so much from Jericho, but what Joshua did in Jericho. And this is found in the book of Joshua, chapter 6. This is where we're going to be spending most of our time. Now, on Wednesday night, Dan told me that because we didn't meet on last Sunday, it was okay to preach twice as long today. So I think that's what he said. I wasn't listening. I'm not sure what's going on here. Let's see. Nope. There we go. So we're going to be looking at Joshua chapter 6 most of the time. But before we get into that, I want to frame why we're talking about this and why I think it's important. We, maybe not so much in this congregation, but the denomination that we are a part of, or most of us have come from, many of us went to a Bible college that was in Oregon and now in Atlanta, that trains pastors for the Church of God of the Abrahamic faith. Some of the churches have modified the wording on their sign to make it a little less scary sounding and taken out that word Abrahamic and put in faith like Abraham. But really what it's saying is that we as a body of Christ, we as this congregation profess that we have faith like Abraham. Just look at this one, I guess. That's what it's here for. So here we got one artist's illustration of what Abraham and Isaac might have looked like. Many of us are familiar with that story. Abraham had faith to believe God that he was going to have a son. He was going to have descendants, because God promised you're going to have a land, you're going to have descendants, you're going to have blessings for all of eternity. All of people from now on are going to be blessed through you. But he didn't have a son. Then in his old age, he had a son named Isaac, but then God asked him to sacrifice that son. And he got all the way up to the point that Isaac was on the altar and the knife was raised in the air about to sacrifice him before there was some other provision of how to accomplish God's will. It's kind of hard to imagine, and I think nowadays, if God asked us to sacrifice our children, physically sacrifice our children with a knife, I think most of us would question that seriously. And if not, most of the rest of society would think we were crazy and need to be institutionalized or imprisoned. Because God doesn't really ask us to do things like that very often anymore. But there was another thing about Abraham's faith that he had to do that sometimes we don't think about as much, and that was that he had to get up and move somewhere. He had to trust God and go where God told him to go, even when it really didn't make sense and he really didn't know where he was going. So that story is in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 5. And I put it up here on the board in the NIV, but you can read along in your version, whatever you have. But I want to frame today's sermon from Joshua against the story of Abraham. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 says, "The Lord had said to Abram," his name was later changed to Abraham, "the Lord had said to Abram, 'Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you.'" He didn't say go to such and such a land. He said go where I will show you. He hadn't showed him yet where he's even supposed to go. "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you will curse you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram had a choice, and what did he do? He went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he had a major move. He was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, whose name was later changed to Sarah, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. So we've got this big convoy of Abram, his whole family, all of his possessions, everything he's accumulated for all of his life up to age 75. And he's going to the land of Canaan, and he arrived there. Here we've got a couple different opinions about what the land borders were for the promised land that God ultimately promised to give to Abraham. There's a couple different variations here, but roughly you can see this right here is Gaza. This is in the news today still. But no matter which version you look at, whether you look at the blue-lined border or the red-lined border, Gaza is in that land that was promised to Abraham and his descendants. Here we have the Jordan River. This is along the east side of the promised land to Abraham. It's interesting because now a lot of times we hear about the West Bank, but the Jordan River, just file that away in your mind, the Jordan River is the east side of the promised land to Abraham. So we're just talking about exactly the territory that is still today being talked about. Jerusalem, right there. Gaza, right there. Egypt is over here. Here you've got the Jordan River. So for those that maybe weren't here for the New Year's Eve service or the New Year's service, and there's a few that we're glad to see today that I don't think were there those times, but we talked a little bit about the beginning part of the book of Joshua. And so I want to look, before we get into chapter 6, let's look at chapter 5 for a little refresher. Verse 6, it said, "The Israelites had moved about in the desert 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey." So the Israelites in Joshua chapter 5, they've been wandering around, and now we're at the end of 40 years of wandering. God made them wander around because they were not going to get to see the promised land because they had disobeyed. So We're in the book of Joshua, and earlier this week I was talking with some friends about the game nights that we have, and that we used to have as young couples in when we lived in Dixon. We used to get together with young couples for game nights about once a month, and this church has been good about, we occasionally get together for game nights. The East Oregon Church, the Oregon Church has done some game nights. I think those are good times. One of the games that, so we were talking about different board games that our family likes to play, and one of the games that Carter is really good at is a game called Timeline. And there's a similar version that I guess is called Chronology, a similar game, but we have the Timeline. And it's got pictures of different world events and different inventions on one side of the card, and on the back side of the card, it's got the year that that thing happened. And so the goal is, as you're dealt out cards, you're supposed to take turns playing your card in the timeline. Where does this fit? So for example, where does the fountain pen invention fit in comparison to the invention of an airplane? Some of them are easier, some of them are hard. And then the more cards you get on there, the harder it is sometimes to figure out, now where exactly did that fit? And so sometimes, even though I've been to the Bible college, even though I've read these passages before, even though I've sang the song of Joshua Fit the Battle of Jericho as a kid, sometimes it's hard for me to remember, where does this all fit in the timeline? And that's hard for me with the game that Carter likes to play as well. I'm not very good at that game, but Carter can smoke us every time. And so I just kind of want to look, if you have your phone, you might snap a picture of this, because I know it's way too much to read right now. That's not the point. Or you could look at this website later, compellingtruth.org. It's got a timeline of approximately when did all these Bible characters do the different things in the Old Testament. But I wanted to point out just a couple of them. So we've got the flood happening around 2350 BC, Tower of Babel, 2250, Abraham, the story of Abraham from Genesis, 2165 BC. Then we go all the way through Joseph, sold into slavery, 1895 BC. Jacob and his family moved to Egypt, about 1870. We had a sermon a few months ago, maybe now, about Joseph and Jacob. Then Moses was about 1530 BC. The Exodus from Egypt was about 1450 BC. And then 40 years in the wilderness, that's what we talked about just now in Joshua chapter 5. That was about 1450 BC-ish to 1410. So the part that we're going to focus on today happened sometime around 1410 to 1390 BC. This is Joshua and the invasion of Jericho. So I'll give you another second if anybody wants to grab a picture of that. Otherwise, it will be on the, hopefully available on the website later, so you can look at that. But compellingtruth.org is where I got this timeline. Here's a map, again, a reminder of, I put this in my sermon a couple weeks ago, but Jericho was just on the west side of the Jordan River, the west bank, if you will. The Israelites, after their 40 years of wandering, they ended up on the east side of the Jordan River, just north of the Dead Sea. In today's map, we would see that Gaza is like right over in this area. So here's the walled city of Jericho. Here's the Israelites. And they're about to cross over the Jordan River. We read the story about how they gathered stones out of the river and stacked them up to remember. And we did that same thing on New Year's Eve. We stacked up some stones outside by the lighthouse to remember that we have been through so much in the last year and in the years in the past, but yet we're going forward. We're crossing into an unknown, and we're desiring to follow God. And when the Israelites did that stacking of the stones, it was designed so that when the kids asked, hey, why are these stones piled up like that? That didn't just happen. It was designed to start a discussion so the Israelites could say, That's because God helped us do a miraculous thing and cross that Jordan River. And then later, this story hadn't happened yet, but the story of Jericho and all the things, all the amazing things, those stones were supposed to be a reminder. And so that's what we did out there too in a little way, is every time you see those stones, what have you been through? What has God led you through in the past? What are you going to do in the future? Are you going to continue to follow God? So there's really three points that I want to share with you today. I'm going to try to keep it concise. I know I joked about doubling the time, but I want to do better about keeping my messages more concise in the new year. And so I want to narrow it down to just three points today. And the first one is that I want to talk about obedience to God's instruction and how we can see that in the story contained in Joshua chapter 6. So obedience to God's instruction. We know in the beginning part of Joshua, as we just talked about, they're standing on the east side of the Jordan River. The Jordan River is not like, we talked about it, it's not like the Rock River. This is perhaps 100 feet deep and maybe as much as several hundred feet wide. This is a big river. This is not the Kishwaukee. This is something that if God asked you to just go ahead and carry the Ark of the Covenant and step out into the water and just trust that it's going to part, this would be something that would take a tremendous amount of faith to do that, because this is an important thing that the priests were carrying, and this is an intimidating river. But they did it, and as soon as they set foot in the water started parting. And we know the story. They gathered the rocks. This one's kind of a blurry picture, but they gathered the rocks and they set up stones on the other side of the river. We know that story. They stacked them up. Let's look at Joshua 6, 1 through 5 together and see what we can learn about obedience to God's plan. I have it up on the screen in NIV, but read along in your version. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites. No one went out, and no one came in. They're in a walled-off city. They've got the advantage, the tactical advantage. The people of Jericho can look down and see the Israelites. They knew that they had crossed over the river miraculously, and they were scared. The people of Jericho were like, we have heard about what these Israelites did when they left Egypt before, and now they're coming across the Jordan River. They had sent out some people to try to pursue them back or figure out where the Israelites went, and they had to go across where there was a forded area. They couldn't just go back across the Jordan in the way that the Israelites had done. But the Israelites, they were doing some things, and we talked about it before, they were doing some things that were not very strategically, they didn't make sense strategically. They crossed the Jordan River, and then they camped out there for several days. They had a meal, they celebrated the Passover, they sampled some of the food from the land, and then they went through a ritual of circumcision, anybody that hadn't been circumcised yet. So they went through a surgery, they healed up from that, all while they're waiting in very close to enemy territory, a walled-off city where people have the tactical advantage to look down on them. They're healing up from a surgery. Let's look at verse 2, chapter 6, verse 2. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered to Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days." So they had a choice. Are they going to be obedient to God's plan? Are they going to be obedient to God's instructions? God told them, go ahead and go march around that city once a day for 6 days. one thing had to happen was that Joshua had to believe that was from God and not be afraid of marching up towards this walled city. And then, two, the people had to follow him. They had to believe that he was actually the leader who had instructions from God. Because if just Joshua went by himself, I don't know, maybe God still would have delivered the city of Jericho into his hands, but the command was, have everybody else follow you and go march around. He said, verse 4, have seven priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark, and on the seventh day march around the city seven times with the priests blowing the trumpets. So he gave very specific instructions. One time for 6 days, seven times on the seventh day, blow the trumpets. Imagine that. What God's asking you to do. Sometimes I think we think just of these stories as children's stories, or we look at pictures that are drawn like this, or maybe we saw the flannel graphs as a kid, or the whatever in Sunday school, the little stickers, pages with stickers that we put on. But I was thinking about the story of Noah too, this past week, and just how, you know, a lot of times we just think about these as children's stories, but Noah, God asked Noah to build an ark when he was 100 years old, and many scholars think that nobody had seen rain at that point, that it somehow had not rained, that water worked differently, the crops were watered from beneath instead of from the air. God asked him to build an ark and gather up all the animals, and there's going to be a flood, and people are watching him and saying, this guy is crazy. And probably most of us, if we got a request like that, or we got an instruction like that from God, we would think, I don't think that's really from God. I don't, you know, this is a major undertaking for me to be doing, to build an ark when I'm 100 years old, you know. And so this is what God had asked Joshua to do. Think about that for a second. March around this walled-off city where people have the tactical advantage to look down on you with spears and rocks and whatever else they can hurl down at you. And go ahead and just march around once a day. Go back, camp out, come back, do the same thing again the next day. And on the seventh day, we're going to do it seven times, and then you're going to blow these trumpets. How would you feel if God gave you an instruction that seemed crazy like that? Verse 5, when you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout, then the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone, straight in. So point one was obedience to God's instruction. We're looking at obedience to God's instruction. Are they going to obey what the actual instruction was? Point two is trusting God's plan. So it's one thing to obey what somebody tells you. It's another thing to trust that what they say is actually going to happen. So, I can't think of a specific example right now, but I'm sure that you can. If you've had children or you've been a child, which I think includes everybody in this room, parents sometimes tell us things that don't really make sense to us at the time, right? And sometimes we choose to obey what they tell us to do, and sometimes we choose not to. But regardless of what you do as far as obeying what they tell you to do, trusting that the reason why they said to do that is actually going to be true is another step. And And so the Israelites also had to do that in Joshua chapter 6. Trust God's plan. They had to do it when they were told to cross the Jordan River. And it's one thing to watch somebody else lead the way in something brave, but then it's another step to trust God's plan and step into that riverbed as well, while the water is, quote, heaped up beside you. Are you going to step into that riverbed? Are you going to trust God's plan? So they did it once already, just a few days ago when they crossed the Jordan River, but now here we are in Joshua chapter 6, verses 6 through 14. Let's read through that together. Again, it's in the NIV on the screen. Read it in whatever version you like the best. Joshua chapter 6, verse 6. So Joshua, son of Nun — that doesn't mean he didn't have a father, it means his father's name was Nun — called the priests and said to them — listen to this really carefully, look at what he said to them, and look at how it compares to what God actually said to Joshua. He said, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and have seven priests carry trumpets in front of it." And he ordered the army, "Advance, march around the city with an armed guard going ahead of the Ark of the Lord." When Joshua had spoken to the people, the seven priests carrying the seven trumpets before the Lord went forward, blowing their trumpets, and the Ark of the Lord's covenant followed them. Okay, so what did God say to Joshua, and what did Joshua say to the people? Here's what I noticed. God said to Joshua all the details of the plan, or at least a lot of them, more details than what he gave to his army. He said, go march around one time for 6 days, then seven times on the seventh day, then blow the trumpets. What did Joshua say to his army? He said, go march around the city. He didn't tell them how many times. And they didn't ask. They just trusted that their leader said, this is what God told me to do, and they followed it. So when Joshua had spoken to the people, the seven priests carrying the seven trumpets before the Lord went forward, blowing their trumpets, and the Ark of the Lord's covenant followed them. Verse 9, the armed guard marched ahead of the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard followed the Ark. All this time the trumpets were sounding. But Joshua had commanded the army, do not give a war cry, do not raise your voices, do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then shout. Verse 11. So he had the Ark of the Lord carried around the city, circling it once. Then the army returned to camp and spent the night there. Verse 12. Joshua got up early the next morning, and the priests took up the Ark of the Lord. The seven priests carrying the seven trumpets went forward, marching before the Ark of the Lord and blowing the trumpets. The armed men went ahead of them, and the rear guard followed the Ark of the Lord, while the trumpets kept sounding. So on the second day, they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. They did this for 6 days. Joshua didn't, at least it's not recorded here, Joshua didn't explain the whole plan to them that he had from God. He didn't tell them all the details of what God had told him. And God hadn't told Joshua all the plans, all exactly how it was going to work. God gave Joshua, the leader, some instructions. Joshua gave those instructions to his army. The people had to choose whether they're going to obey and trust that this is God's plan. The third point I want to look at today is the power of God's intervention. Even when things don't seem like it's even possible that this could work. How could this work out, that we're going to just march around this walled-off city while the people have a tactical advantage over us, and we're just going to march up in there, go straight on in? There's power in God's intervention. Let's look at that. We know we have the benefit of hindsight, and we know the story that the walls came tumbling down. It's in the song, right? Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. And all these people, you know, this is kind of a graphic picture for a cartoon, but yeah, I think it looks like, reminds me of the Titanic movie from the 90s or early 2000s or whenever that was, the people falling. You know, that's what was really going on. Sometimes we just think of it as the walls came tumbling down, they went in there and they got the city. But this was a pretty amazing thing that happened. People are dying, people are just unbelievable. Nobody used dynamite, nobody launched a rocket into the city. They just marched around. They blew some trumpets and they shouted when God said to shout. So let's look at Joshua 6, verse 15 through 21 as we close it out here. On the seventh day, they got up at daybreak and marched around the city seven times in the same manner, except that on that day, they circled the city seven times. I don't know how big the city was for sure. I meant to look it up. But marching around, let's say, the city of Rockford, seven times. That's not just like a little, yeah, I don't know how big Jericho was, but seven times could be a lot of miles. I don't know. So on the seventh time, when the priests sounded the trumpet blast, Joshua commanded the army, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." The city and all that is in it are to be devoted to the Lord. Only Rahab the prostitute. Now remember, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. If you weren't here, look up that story. There were some spies that went into Jericho ahead of time. They found Rahab, who hid them from the people that were trying to kill them. And so as an agreement between God and her, for her help in the matter, her and all of her household would be saved. So only Rahab and the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall be spared because she hid the spies we sent. Verse 18, but keep away from the devoted things so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it. All the silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron are sacred to the Lord and must go into his treasury. Verse 20, when the trumpet sounded, the army shouted. They had a choice, and they chose to do it. Joshua said, "Shout." They shouted. Verse 20, and at that sound of the trumpet, when the men gave a loud shout, the wall collapsed. So everyone charged straight in, and they took the city. They devoted the city to the Lord and destroyed with the sword every living thing in it. Now, this is a part I don't understand, but it's what the Bible says happened. What did they destroy? Every living thing in it. Men, women, young and old, cattle, sheep, and donkeys. Now, why would God want them to destroy the cattle, sheep, and donkeys? Now, cattle and sheep, we could argue, well, it's because God wanted to give them food. It was for meat. I don't know anybody that's ever talked about how delicious donkey meat is. So it wasn't for the meat. And we know that killing the young men is probably a strategic good thing. Maybe even the women, so that they're not raising up children that have animosity toward the Israelites. But the old men and the old women, why kill them? Why the donkeys? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but it's not up to me to decide what God says to do. It's up to me to decide, am I going to obey what God said to do? And am I going to trust that this is God's plan? And am I going to trust that God has the ability to do miraculous things? So I want to leave you with this. Obedience to God's plan. Trust that what he said is going to happen is going to happen. And remembering that God's intervention can be rather amazing sometimes, and things that don't seem like there's any possible way that this could happen can happen.
Oh, this is a bad picture, but look at it online later, maybe,
on the website. But here's a pile of rocks. We've got a pile of rocks outside of our church building that every time we come inside and go out, they're there for you to see. We piled them up on New Year's Eve to remember the things that God has led us through this past year and in our past years and what we want to do going forward. Like the Israelites piled the rocks out of the Jordan River to remind them God has done miraculous things.
I don't know if it's going to be better when I click to the smaller one. Luke 19:39-40 says, some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." And he said, "I tell you, if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." There's a time to be quiet and a time to speak. I understand that. But if our church is too silent too long about the miraculous things God has brought us through and the things that we're looking forward to, the stones are going to cry out. God doesn't need us to do anything for him. God doesn't need us to do anything for him. He wants us to do things for him. But if we are silent, the stones will cry out. So this picture, I found it online. I don't know if maybe it might work to look at this little screen, but when you look at it from a distance, then words appear in it, and it says, "The stones will cry out." But when you look at it up close, it just looks like a pile of stones, and I thought that was kind of cool. It's not necessarily directly connected to the story of Joshua, but I just thought it was kind of a neat little thing. Let's not let the stones cry out when it's our turn to speak about what God has done for us.